This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Ana Pacheco. She is Santa Fe's city historian. She's author of 7 books. Her new one is A History of Spirituality in Santa Fe, City of the Holy Faith. And she will be signing books this Sunday, the 28th of February, from 2 to 5 at the United Church of Christ on Arroyo Chamiso. And Reverend Talitha Arnold will be there, who wrote the foreword to this book. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Mary Charlotte, thank you again. I always really enjoy when you invite me onto these programs, so thank you for thinking of me.
Well, it's always great to have you, and this is a particularly wonderful book, A History of Spirituality in Santa Fe, covering traditions from basically prehistory to the present. So many people, cultures, traditions. The book is illustrated with so many photographs and illustrations of various kinds. How did you get the idea to write it?
Well, you know, that Santa Fe is my hometown, you know, and I moved back here. I lived in New York City for 16 years, and I came back at the end of 1991. And I guess because I was older, I just started to realize, well, look at all these different things here. And then I started to think back that even as a child, there were different religious groups in town. And, you know, back in the mid-60s to early 1970s, you know, New Age came to town. The Sikhs came in a big way. The Hare Krishnas were here. And I just started to think about all this. And I guess for me, Santa Fe is Spanish for the City of Holy Faith. And I thought to myself, well, there must be some connection there. How is it that a town this small can be so diverse spiritually? And I said, well, it's because we're named the City of Holy Faith.
You think that's it?
Well, you know, I'd like to believe that, yes. Yeah. And then there's also, you know, and when I started interviewing people for the book, I said, well, why do you think Santa Fe is so spiritual? And many people said, well, it has to do with the land. It has to do with the Native Americans. It has to do with, you know, the mountains, the energy from the mountain vortex. And I started to think about that. I said, you know, that there's something to that. There's a reason that way back when people started coming here. And I think there is something that I think we're kind of, you know, in a like a little bubble here of spirituality. And I think it has to do with the mountains and just the beautiful sky and the openness.
It must have been an amazing journey for you to write this book, because even though you were born and raised here, first of all, there's always new people and new traditions coming in all the time. But there's so many things that you uncovered and people and groups that you uncovered. Did you attend like the churches and ceremonies of a lot of these groups?
I definitely did. As a matter of fact, because of this book now, I'm now a member of one of the Buddhist temples on 2nd Street. And so I tell people now I'm a Kabu, I'm a Catholic Buddhist. And that's the thing about Santa Fe. You can belong to more than one group and just, you know, you get all this different kind of energy from it. And so I did go to some of the different churches. I did go to, different ceremonies. I went to the ashram for Amma. She's from India. She comes here once a year, and she's called the hugging state saint. She goes around the world hugging people. So yeah. I did different things like that. And I met with so many people. So many people were so great. Everyone was so gracious with their time and knowledge. And everybody was so excited. It's like, yeah, I'm glad you're doing this book, you know?
Were there some moments or events or ceremonies or whatever that were particularly moving to you?
Well, you know what I did find, again, when I started doing the whole chapter on Buddhism, you know, the temple on 2nd Street, it's TNL, it's the Thubutan Norbu Ling,
yeah,
Buddhist temple. The head Buddhist there, Geshe Sarab, he showed me the Buddhist handbook of prayers, and in it was the prayer from St. Francis of Assisi, and he was telling me how in their tradition they had such deep respect for Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I just thought, isn't that beautiful that, you know, that these different groups are embracing other faiths as well? And so that was kind of like one of those aha moments for me. That was just one of those things that came out when I was researching the book.
Did anybody try to convert you?
Not at all. I mean, and that's the thing, too, for, you know, Santa Fe still being such a small town, even some of the real the real standard religions, they were just very, they were just like, again, they were so supportive. It's like, isn't this interesting? Isn't it wonderful that you're doing this about all of us? And one thing I did learn in researching the book, and this is going back, you know, to the beginning of the 20th century, all of these different groups supported each other. I mean, when the first Presbyterian minister came to town, he was able to hold his masses with the Episcopalians, or maybe it's backward. But anyway, what I'm saying is they would help each other. When Temple Beth Shalom was first getting started, they used to hold their Sunday school practices at the basement in the Baptist church, the Lutheran church. I mean, all these different churches would help each other, and even today, you'll see that a lot of these different groups hold their services, you know, maybe in a Catholic church or a Baptist church or something, and they're a totally different religion. But they're all, again, I think it's just this all-encompassing, we don't care who your God or path is, it all leads up the same way.
They also seem to help and support each other in times of trouble, like when there's vandalism or other kinds of problems. They really have pulled together.
They definitely do get together and they just come to each other's aid. There was something that Reverend Talitha Arnold mentions in her foreword, where some politician was saying something bad about Muslims, and everybody got together in town and like put a stop to that immediately. And again, I think that's the beauty of the spirituality in Santa Fe. That's above all else. I don't care, you know, politics, economics, where you came from. We just basically all honor each other's spiritual beliefs.
Now, you are deeply rooted in New Mexico. Not only were you born and raised here, but your family goes way, way back. And you talk a little bit about the many different religious people that you've had in your family over the generations.
I come from my parents are gone now, so it's not as intense, but I come from a really strict Catholic family. And my mom's brother, Daniel Ortiz, he was a Christian brother for over 60 years, and he was the founding president of La Salle University in Manila. So we didn't even get to know him, and he left with the Christian Brothers when he was 14. So I didn't get to know him until I was a young adult, and then he eventually retired here before he passed away in 2000. So he was a Christian brother. My cousin Steve Armenta was a Christian brother on my dad's side of the family. I had a cousin who was a Loreto nun. I had two cousins. One cousin was a Trappist monk, and the other one was a priest. So, I mean, yeah, definitely very religious. But what was so amazing to me, even before I did this book, is back in the early 1990s when I was publishing La Herencia magazine, we had this one cover story on New Mexico's crypto-Jews, the Sephardic Jews who came here to flee the Spanish Inquisition. And it turns out that I'm Jewish, and so before my father died, I had his DNA done, and for sure, and he definitely had the J2 marker. So, and on my mom's side of the family, she was an Ortiz, and in Hebrew, Ortiz means light. So that was really a revelation for me when I came back. It's like, God, I'm Jewish, and here I've been raised a Catholic, you know. So, those kind of things were, you know, I already had that knowledge before I went out and did the book. But a lot of people aren't familiar with, you know, with this deep-rooted Jewish tradition here. Of the 19 founding families of Santa Fe, 11 were Jewish.
Oh, that's so interesting. And it's such a strange thing to say, you know, here I am, I'm raised Catholic, but it turns out that I'm Jewish, because Judaism is a religion, not a gene, but those genetic markers are there. So it's a sort of odd.
And then, you know what, people will say to me things like, well, don't you want to be Jewish now or something? And I know of people that when they found out they had these Jewish roots, that they have gone to embrace, you know, start to go into synagogue. And I just always tell people that, you know, at this point I respect it. But, you know, really, at my age, I'm not going to start any new different practices, just because I think it's all good. You know, a little, if you go to my house, I have a menorah in my house. I have Christian crosses. I have a little Buddha. I have different things, and I think I have New Age crystals. I think it's it's all good. It's all good.
You're not going to start any new religious practices except Buddhism.
Well, Kabooism. That's a new. Myself and my friend Dee Dee Downs, we're the only two members now. But I mean, I'm not seriously starting that. But I do, you know, I go to the temple now twice a week and I meditate. I was there this morning. I actually do the water bowl ceremony one morning a week, and that's really, it's like a form of meditation. So really, all of this is just so good for your mind and your soul, of course.
We're talking to Ana Pacheco about her new book, A History of Spirituality in Santa Fe. So you grew up, were you expected to go to Mass every Sunday, to go to Catholic school and go through all of that, get married in the Catholic Church and so on?
It was awful, yes.
Really?
I had to. As a matter of fact, I didn't want to have my hair curled for my first Holy Communion. So I remember my madrina, who was like my godmother, she had to like literally almost tie me down to curl my hair. I was so upset. I was crying having to go up there. And yeah, and we had to go to Mass all the time. And then back then it was, you know, serious Catholicism. During Lent, you couldn't eat meat on Friday. And basically it was kind of like, if you were a good Catholic, you didn't eat meat on Fridays ever. Just all these different things. And I had to, I went to a Catholic school. I went to St. Francis Parochial School my first through third grade, but then I got kicked out because I was just not into it, you know. And it was really sad for my mom, because my mom, my sister, all the women in my mom's side of the family, they all went 1 through 12 to Catholic schools, all of them graduating from Loreto Academy. So here came, you know, the black sheep here and broke that tradition and never went back. And then I think after my first Holy Communion, I did not go back to church until I was in my mid-30s.
Oh, my goodness.
Because when I had children, because I did feel that, I mean, I had this spiritual foundation whether I went to church or not, and I just felt that when I had kids that they had to be brought up with some type of spiritual foundation. I wasn't going to wait till they were 21 for them to figure it out. I mean,
right.
They had to have something. They could do whatever they wanted, but at least they had a spiritual foundation.
So did you make them go to Mass?
Just until about their first Holy Communions, and they kind of stopped too. But they have that foundation. I think it's the foundation that's important. And then later on, I mean, I am a member of the Carmelite community. And so I do, I mean, for the last 20 years, I do go to church every Sunday now. And they're an interesting group that came to town. They're, I don't know if you know about the Carmelites, but they follow two different traditions, the Spanish tradition and the French tradition. The Spanish tradition is here in Santa Fe, and that's the one of St. Teresa de Avila. And St. Teresa was actually a cousin of Don Diego de Vargas, who led the resettlement of Santa Fe in 1692. And so I thought that was a kind of like an interesting connection there. And her grandfather, his last name is Sanchez, he was what they called a Marrano, which is a very condescending, it means pig in Spanish. But he was a Jew who had converted to Catholicism in Spain, but then he went back to Judaism. So he was not really, he was not a happy camper. You know, people were not nice to him there. But I thought it was so interesting that St. Teresa de Avila, who is a doctor of the church, the first doctor of the church, female doctor of the church, is actually, she also is of Jewish origin.
Very interesting. Let's go back to the history of the European, the Spanish entry into New Mexico and the importation of Christianity, which in so many ways is, I mean, it's really full of contradictions. On the one hand, you have St. Francis, who loved the animals and was such a gentle spirit, and if you want to have a branch of Christianity, it's just such a sweet and nice saint to look up to. On the other hand, you have this incredibly harsh and brutal and bloody conversion or attempt at conversion of native people, all kind of existing simultaneously.
Well, you know, that was brought to us by Queen Isabella. You know, she was called Isabel la Católica. I mean, so her big thing was to Christianize the entire world. That was her agenda.
Right.
And yeah, it was not a nice way that they went about it. And what I talk about in the chapter on Catholicism, it's entitled Evangelizing the West. So it just wasn't here in New Mexico. It was California. It was all over this part of the region, and they really depended heavily on the Franciscan missionaries. And again, their main person or who they follow is, of course, Saint Francis. So there's a lot of contradictions. So they came from, you know, they came from, you know, his Saint Francis, the beliefs of Saint Francis. But here they were, like you said, they were Christianizing, you know, not by choice, but the Native Americans. But that's how it was done.
There are some interesting and colorful characters in the history of Christianity in Santa Fe over the centuries. Who were some of your favorites whom you wrote about?
Well, I don't know if I said so much as a character, but I think the most important Franciscan missionary of the 20th century, or actually, and I believe in the history of New Mexico, was Fray Angelico Chavez. And he did so much work. He was an author. He was an artist. If it weren't for him, he wrote the history of La Conquistadora. He wrote the famous book. It's considered the Bible for genealogists. It's called The Origin of New Mexico Families. And so of the 150 families that came here, he documented all those people. And to this day, anybody who's got links to that, that's how they can find their ancestors. So it was very important that he did that. He was very instrumental in trying to get the penitentes, the groups that are all over northern New Mexico that still exist today, to get them accepted into the Catholic Church. Because, well, here is one character, Archbishop Lamy. You know, he came over here and he did not like the Spanish priests. He wasn't terribly fond of the Spanish people. And we were kind of a backwater. I think he came from Baltimore or something. So he came out here and it was pretty rustic for him. And he just didn't trust the penitentes. And it was through Fray Angelico. He kind of brokered this thing with the Catholic Church. At that time, it was Archbishop Byrne, and who seemed to be a pretty open archbishop. And so he did, so Fray Angelico did important things like that. And there's actually, there's a library named after him at the Palace of the Governors. And I should point out to your listeners that April 17th, I'm doing a talk on, I'll be doing a talk on Fray Angelico and how important he was to New Mexico at La Fonda.
Excellent. Well, we will try to remind people of that when the time comes. Tell us about La Conquistadora.
Well, the interesting thing about La Conquistadora, well, first of all, she arrived in 1625.
What is she?
She is the oldest Marian icon in the United States. And so when you think about La Conquistadora, Our Lady of Guadalupe, any of the Marian images, they're all a manifestation of the Virgin Mary. So unlike St. Francis, he was a person, and well, Mary was a person as well, but I mean, when you pray, for Catholics, when they pray to the different saints for, St. Anthony, please help me find my keys, or St. Francis, please take care of my cat, that type of thing, basically what you're doing is you're asking these saints to intercede for you, to kind of get the message to God. When you're praying to La Conquistadora or to the Our Lady of Guadalupe, you're going straight to your mom. You're going to mom, That's like a much different level there. But anyway, so back to La Conquistadora. She's a Marian image. She came to Santa Fe in 1625. She was carried from Mexico City by Fray Alonso Benavides, and he was going to take over, he's going to be the head Franciscan at that point. And so when they got here, this was it had only been the official founding of Santa Fe 1610, but historians differ on that. It could have been 1605. But anyway, say for anywhere from 15 to 20 years, this outpost, this little of the Spanish Empire was struggling. They weren't getting help from Spain. And the people, there was these issues, the things with the Native Americans, some were friendly. It was just all these different things going on. So here comes this Franciscan friar with eight other Franciscans, and they bring this statue, and it represents hope. I mean, it's there kind of like coming from Spain for them. And so it just meant so much, and it just helped them to carry on. Another interesting thing for La Conquistadora, during the Pueblo Revolt of 1680, she was in a chapel that was on fire, and it was a Jewish woman who saved her from the fire. That's in my book. And when I was doing this book, all the different things I was finding out, I was amazed at the rich history of Santa Fe. But so La Conquistadora has now been in part of Santa Fe's history for 390 years. And she and Diego de Vargas are mentioned every year in the proclamation at the Fiesta de Santa Fe, which happens to be the oldest community celebration in the nation. And La Conquistadora, again, is the oldest Marian image. So there's such rich history.
And
here,
she's like a 2.5 foot high statue.
She is, exactly. And
do we get to see her?
Well, she's at the cathedral. She's in she has her own chapel at the Basilica Cathedral of St. Francis of Assisi. So you can see her anybody can go. But they also always the first week in June, right around that time, she's taken in procession to Rosario Chapel, and so you can see the procession, and then there's a week of it's a week long novena. You can pray to her there, and then at the end of that week of novena, she's then processed back to the cathedral. So that's an annual thing, and that's kind of like the beginning, kind of like the kickoff, although it's in June, it's kind of like the start of the Fiesta de Santa Fe.
We're talking to Ana Pacheco about her book, A History of Spirituality in Santa Fe. There's lots of amazing photographs, including a lot of really beautiful and interesting archival photographs. How did you find them all?
Well, some of them are a collection of, the Fray Angelico Chavez Library. I spend a lot of time there. They have an incredible collection. So many of those images are from the Palace of the Governor's archives. One of the interesting things for me is when I did the whole the chapter on Buddhism and the chapter on the Sikhs, Lisa Law lives here in Santa Fe, and she's just she's a treasure in Santa Fe, and she was the one who documented the counterculture. She was at Woodstock. She's actually got a show now at the Museo Cultural called something on the 60s, Flashing on the 60s. But anyway, she has been here since the mid 60s. And so she had all this incredible imagery of the Buddhists, of the Sikhs. So that whole chapter, thanks to Lisa Law, is in the book. And then a lot of the different places, like the First Presbyterian Church, many of these churches have their own archives. And that's what I found out when I started the book last May or something. My first stop, of course, was Fray Angelico, because I know the library there, because I know I can get images there. And they didn't have a lot of stuff on churches. And I said, well, where is it? And the archivist said to me, you need to go to the churches. So that's what I did. And so, for instance, the First Presbyterian Church, they have their own archives. They have really interesting old photos that only they have. And again, it was so nice. Every place I went with my scanner, and they all let me scan photos. And so that's where a lot of these images came from.
There's so many other religions that are neither Catholic nor, I mean, we haven't even really talked that much about Native American religions and ways of practicing spirituality, but there's so many other things, like there are churches or spiritual traditions like the I Am tradition, which I had never heard of, but I guess you grew up with that here in Santa Fe.
Yes, the I Am, I Am religion, they came to Santa Fe in 1942, and they're considered the first or one of the first New Age religions because their spiritual practices are embedded in sound and light, which is like a big thing for New Age. And I knew about them because my mom's hairdresser was an I Am, and they were real big in the 1940s here. And they're an American born sect. I mean, this was created, unlike all these European religions that came to New Mexico to Santa Fe with Manifest Destiny, like the Presbyterians, the Baptists, the Episcopalians came with the Civil War, these different things. This was a religion that was born in in the United States. And what it was this engineer by the name of Guy Ballard out of Chicago, and he was hiking up at Mount Shasta in California, and this figure appeared to him, this Saint Germain, not a saint, but a count, a 19th century count, who actually did exist. And he gave him all these discourses, these messages, kind of like, like Moses with the burning bush, and just similarities. I mean, I found a lot of similarities with how these religions started. And so he started this whole new religion, and Santa Fe was the second place. They had a temple in the Illinois area, but then Santa Fe was their second temple. And what's really interesting about that chapter, which is entitled Freedom of Religion, they had their postal permit. They had their postal permit revoked because the postal service said, "This is not a religion. You guys are just trying to, not have to pay the money." And so they fought it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they won
5-4.
Exactly, but it was from the victory happened while they were in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
And what the judge said was, "We may not think it's a religion, but they think it. This group thinks it's a religion, and so it's a religion." So I thought that was a beautiful practice, kind of like an exercise in our Constitution, freedom of religion. And one thing I really want to say about that, because my parents are, they have since passed away, and I'm thinking, what was it like then? Santa Fe in 1942, 1943, maybe 7,000 people, predominantly still Spanish speaking, and suddenly here comes the Manhattan Project, which is a military checkpoint for Los Alamos. The I Ams come to town, this New Age religion that's into light and sound and all these different things, and the Buddhist internment camp. I mean, the Japanese internment camp. I mean, I'm thinking, what did people think? I mean, it's kind of like, it was like they were being invaded by Martians or something. It was just, I mean, it was so foreign to people here. And I just want to point out, too, that when I started doing the chapter on Buddhism, it turns out that Buddhism began with the Japanese internment camp. I got this wonderful image of all these Buddhist ministers at the camp, and they're wearing their prayer shawls or whatever they're called, katas. And it's just so fascinating that so that chapter's called Seeds of Dharma, because that's when it kind of, the seeds were planted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and those, you know, all those contradictions of love and dharma and sound and light and loving kindness on the one hand, and then inventing weapons to vaporize millions of people on the other hand, at the same time, in the same place. You said it must have been strange for people to witness all of these characters, all these people descending on Santa Fe. Did you ask any old timers about what that was like?
Well, I have a friend, Monica Sasaya Halford, and she's in 85 now, and she remembers the IMs, and everybody thought they were just very nice. You know, that's the beautiful thing about Santa Fe. It's always been live and let live. You know,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, they're here. Okay, far out. You know, no, that's okay. So the ones that are around, everything, there was this one, somebody had told me something, an older person, that during the Japanese, and when they had the Japanese internment camp, that suddenly there was this shortage of meat or something. And so the local people were all saying, the meat's all up at the chat. They have it at the camp. That's why we don't have any meat. And so there was a little bit of that going on. But I do want to mention that when the one thing after I finished this book and I went through all the different people that I profiled, all the different faiths and spiritual groups, that virtually everybody who came here or is here because of spirituality came here because of a war. Some kind of a conflict.
Is that right?
And so actually, not to promote that, but April the 3rd at La Fonda, I'm doing a talk on the whole war aspect of how it tied into, and so it's called a refuge of, Santa Fe is a spiritual refuge, and it's basically all these, for instance, the Quakers came here because they were pacifists right after World War I. I mean, so there's all these different connections, and even if you go way back when, the reason Santa Fe is got the name Santa Fe is because it was Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand named it that after the longest running war in history with the Moors. I mean, so all of these things. And then for the Native Americans, I talk about the Chaco Canyon and different things, and through how they migrated and their different patterns, how the different structures are up there has to do with like invading tribes and things. So it's like really wild that all this spirituality, we're all here because of some awful conflict of war.
How did it come to be that there is a whole big Sikh community in northern New Mexico?
Well, again, thanks to Lisa Law. You know, she was part of this whole counterculture, you know, hippie movement and thing. And she and her husband, they lived in Santa Fe, but they also, you know, they were going between the West Coast and Santa Fe. And she was in Los Angeles, and the musician, what's his name, Johnny Rivers.
Yeah.
He had brought Yogi Bhajan, who from Canada, who was teaching up at one of the universities there, to teach this Kundalini yoga class in L.A. And Lisa and her husband were there, Tom Law, and they were just so taken with him. So they invited him to come to Santa Fe. And so he did this whole big thing. It's in the book, the picture of him teaching Kundalini yoga up in Tusuki, some of the guy had owned this property. And Sikh, so that's how we first, so he started coming little by little, then since they donated some land to them, eventually they ended up in Espanola, but it's still part of Santa Fe County. And so Yogi Bhajan introduced Sikhism, which is the fifth largest religion in the world, to the Western Hemisphere from Santa Fe. Is that incredible? I mean, all these really important historical things take place in Santa Fe. For instance, the stupa up on Cerro Gordo, that is the first stupa. It's a Buddhist stupa. It is the first stupa built in North America.
Is that right?
In Santa Fe, in 1973. Get it? Can you believe these things?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, there is the reason all the spirituality is here is because Santa Fe means City of Holy Faith. We are a spiritual Mecca.
When I moved to Santa Fe in the early 90s, there was an awful lot of what you might call New Age spirituality and channeling and crystals and fairy bells and shops that seemed almost like sort of caricatures of what somebody might satirize the New Age as. And there were a lot of people who made fun of it, and there were a lot of people who took it really seriously. How did you encounter, and I think the town and that movement has kind of changed and matured over the last couple decades since then. How do you behold that whole movement right now?
Well, you know, you have to remember, I grew up here. So back in, 1965, when I was all of, 9 years old, I was already exposed to all of that because, by 67 or right around that time, Woodstock, that whole era, the Sikhs were already here in full force. There was a whole bunch, the Hare Krishnas were here. And so, I grew up, I came of age during crystals. And then, of course, it was also the drug culture. So everybody was smoking grass and all that. So that's been here since way back then. And I think it just, I like what you said about it maturing. I mean, I go to people's houses now, like my aunts or people, and they have crystals in the window. I mean, it just becomes part of the DNA. I mean, it's I don't see it as a caricature. I just think it's just a well-respected part of Santa Fe, and again I think it's just whatever it's all good and whatever works for you. So I attribute a lot of it to the when the Sikhs did get here, and it's all that chapter, the whole chapter on Sikhism is entitled The Age of Aquarius. So that happened right around the mid-60s. We came out of the Piscean age, and it's just entrenched in, again, I hate to use the word DNA, but DNA. I mean, it's just part of Santa Fe's, who we are now. And what I found interesting, and I didn't know a lot about until I did the book, and it's in the same chapter as New Ageism, is New Thought. And that started at the beginning of the last century. And it's people like Robert Ernest Holmes and Mary Baker Eddy. And so that's, the Christian Science Reading Room. All these different, they've all been here since the mid-60s or sometimes even earlier. And so there's a whole process. And what I found was so interesting is, Alcoholics Anonymous is in my book because that's a New Thought tradition, and they're a spiritual group. So a lot of different groups are here.
What is New Thought?
New Thought is basically, it's kind of, I guess, more to do with science. It's kind of like you're, a lot of these early followers where you can change things, you can become, it's kind of, through your mind, it's through right-minded thinking. So a lot of your manifestations come from within you, the person, rather than some, outside God or something.
Yeah, and somebody, you mentioned a person in your book who claimed that she had a disease and she thought it was inherited.
That's Mary Baker Eddy.
Yeah, she changed her thought about it,
exactly.
and was healed. I don't know if that is a verified story, but that's...
Oh, she's very important to this movement, and yes, and she was healed, and she's got followers all over the country. And same thing with Ernest Holmes. It's basically about it's an inner God. You're your own God,
and you can use that way of thinking to supposedly cure your illnesses. And a lot of kind of weird stuff has come out of that, with people being told that they can cure their own illnesses, which sometimes they can't. I mean, not everybody can just cure their own illnesses by changing their minds.
Well, again, I'm just open to, I mean, if it might work for some people, I can't discredit whether it does or doesn't. I mean, I do think there's a real place for antibiotics, and I think children should get vaccinated. There are certain things that, but again, these, I mean, I respect all these different beliefs, because if it works for them, that's fine.
Now, Protestantism, which you touched on a little bit, is also a big part of the world of Santa Fe religion and spirituality.
Well, that's a huge one. That was the second group to come, and when I say Protestantism, that the very first church to come here were the Baptists. And they couldn't make a go of it. You have to remember that, the Spanish Catholics had a 200-year head start.
Yeah.
So they were the first ones to come at Fort Marcy. This was right with in 1846, when we became an part of the American government. Then they were followed. Since they couldn't make a go of it, the Presbyterians came out, and they really had success. They really had a strong foothold here.
What did they bring that the others didn't?
Well, first of all, they when they came, I think it was 17 years after the Baptists, they never left. I mean, they took over the first Baptist church. They started a school, the Allison James School, Manal School in Albuquerque still exists. They, where is it up in Abiquiu? Ghost Ranch. I mean, they just had this huge, I mean, they were able to really set, educational roots here. And so they just grew and expanded. And again, today there's Manal School is still in existence. There's a Manal Library. So the Presbyterians are very important in establishing an educational foothold. So, and then, and one thing I found with all of these different religions, which still happens today, is because back then we were primarily a Spanish-speaking, you know, community, and now with the influx of Central Americans and people from Mexico, a lot of these religions, everything's done in Spanish. So that's how you get new converts, and so that's what they were able to do. They got the help of Spanish-speaking people here that believed in what they were doing, and that's how they grew their congregations, including the Mormons.
It's interesting. I think there's a lot of people who assume that immigrants are Catholic, and one of my neighbors goes to the Spanish Baptist Church, and that church has really taken care of her. It's very interesting to witness from the outside, because when she had very, very severe problems in her family, and actually ended up staying with me for a while, and her kids and the whole thing, we had a little family inside of my house, the elder ladies of the church came over and they sat together and they made decisions, and it was very formal and very, in a kind of formal way, very nurturing, because they took care of their members. It was interesting.
Well, and you'll see there's a really strong, especially in northern New Mexico, a strong Hispanic Presbyterian tradition. I mean, so yeah, you assume because way back when it was, you know, they were all Catholic. But when I guess there's been so many articles now, you know, the Catholic Church, not just for Hispanics, they're just losing people left and right for an array of reasons.
Yeah.
And they are going to these different churches, most of them being Christian based.
One thing was sort of a takeaway for me looking at this, reading this book and thinking about all these different people here. I mean, you've got Quakers, you've got all sorts of meditation-based religions. You've got the cowboy church. You've got so many different ways of practicing. And yet here we live in what's considered a secular age. After looking at your book, it doesn't seem very secular to me.
Well, you know, I think if you look at the world, I mean, if you read like the headlines and all these different, I don't think the world's a secular place.
Yeah.
So we're just kind of a microcosm of that.
We're talking about the book, A History of Spirituality in Santa Fe. What, after doing this and going through this whole process and talking to so many people, and did you get a hug from the hugging saint?
No, that's like trying to get a hug from the Pope. I mean, I went to see her speak, but I'd have to have stood in line for like 24 hours to get a ticket to get a hug.
Oh my goodness.
And I was on deadline. There was no way I was standing in line overnight to get a hug. But I was able to work with some of her followers, and just really so helpful.
Did you take a gong bath?
No, but I'm going to. My friend Didi's, she's opening up her studio again, so I am going to do the gong bath. I think the real thing that I've done is, I mean, through doing this book, is now I'm now a member of the Buddhist community. In a small way.
Right, but I mean, this is the thing. You open yourself to these things, and they affect you, and they change you. What is your own takeaway, and what would you like people to perhaps take from your book?
Well, that Santa Fe is an all-encompassing, welcoming city, and that you're free to follow in whatever spiritual tradition that you want. But I guess I just really hope that everybody has some kind of a spiritual foundation, or has faith. I mean, whatever it is. I mean, if you believe in, you know, if you believe in an ashtray or something, that's your spiritual, that's fine. As long as you have as long as we all have some type of hope as people, I think that's what keeps you away from drugs and alcohol and different things. I mean, if you just feel like there's something bigger than yourself out there, that, I mean, you know, life is hard. And if you feel like there's something bigger out there that's guiding you, or you can ask something outside of yourself for that type of guidance, I think it's important. I mean, I just think it's better to go through life believing there's something, even if you get to the end of your life and you find out there's nothing, then going through your whole life and thinking there's not anything. How sad is that?
Well, it's funny because, I mean, there are atheists, many of whom have a kind of, if you want to call it faith, their faith is in science.
Well, and that's fine. Well, they have a faith in science. And I mean, they have a faith. I mean, as long as there's faith, like I said, if you think, you know, an ashtray is your faith, that's fine with me. And as long as you have something, some inner core. And I think if we just all have the basic kind of, you know, just kind of like, don't kill, don't, you know, just don't be a bad person, you know.
Ana Pacheco is Santa Fe's city historian. She's author of 7 books. Her new book is A History of Spirituality in Santa Fe, The City of Holy Faith, a wonderful book, richly illustrated. And she will be signing this book this coming Sunday, February 28th, from 2 to 5 at the United Church of Christ. That's at 1804 Arroyo Chamiso here in Santa Fe, right near the corner of St. Michael's Drive. And Reverend Talitha Arnold, who wrote the foreword to the book, will be there also. And there will be entertainment and refreshments, entertainment by Grupo Zia. Thank you so much, Ana, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
You do a great job, Mary Charlotte. Thank you so
and
much.
And so do you. Thanks for all you do for our community.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.